The following is a repeat broadcast of Health Matters, and no phone calls will be taken tonight.
Welcome to Health Matters, the mental health edition. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vegan, psychologist, along with my co-host, Shelley Visconti, who is a counselor and marriage and family therapist. Tonight, we are going to explore what is sometimes called the mind-body connection. I think, Shelley, what we're really going to be talking about is eating and food and exercise.
Yeah, and how those relate to mental health.
We've got two really excellent guests this evening. Sandra Brightup is a longtime friend of mine. I've known her for 30 years, and she is an expert beyond belief on food and nutrition and eating. And I must say that she is an anti-sugar person, and she'll talk about sugar. And also, she is the author of The Dallas Doctor's Diet, and she's the founder of a program, a nationwide program called Naturally Slim. So she knows a great deal about food and nutrition and eating. And Sandra, welcome. We're really happy to have you tonight with us.
Well, it's really fun to be here. I like to talk about this subject. It's, you know, just really what I love.
And so additionally, we have Danita Wines with us. And Danita has been a student, a practicum student with us, Shelley, in our offices of Gable, Vegan, and Lobrano. And she is a fifth-year doctoral student in counseling psychology at some school over in Ruston. What's the name of that school?
Louisiana Tech.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought it was the such. And Danita is what I would call a fitness guru.
Thank you.
How many days a week do you exercise?
I try to work out every day if I can.
8 days a week?
7 days at least, sometimes.
Sometimes, okay.
And that's amazing, being a doctoral student.
Yes. You know? Yeah. I don't know how she had time
I don't know.
Did you go to class? Did you study?
Yes, I do all of the above. But, you know, juggling work and school, you have to find a balance. And that's how I find my balance, maintain my sanity.
Okay. Sandra Brightup, would you kind of give our listeners a quick, within an hour, discussion, or kind of tell us who you are and how you got into this whole business? And
well, I started out with a 10-pound problem, and I started dieting. And for 10 years, I went to every diet program in existence and ended up, you know, going to see Dr. Robert Atkins in New York. And when I read that diets are only successful for keeping weight off, 5% successful, I thought, well, I better learn how to cope with this situation myself. And so I started with behavior change for myself, thinking differently about food, deciding that I was not going to diet anymore. And when I did that, I was very successful and lost all the weight that I had gained through dieting plus my 10 pounds. And then I got volunteers together so I could see if maybe all the tools and techniques that I'd used on myself would be successful with other people. And it was. And the program grew and grew and expanded into NaturallySlim.com. Not .com, but Naturally Slim Incorporated. And my daughter took it over in 2000, and now we are the wellness program for over 200 national corporations and insurance companies and hospital systems. So I've really become from focused on wellness and what people need to do to be well, to try to be healthy.
And Danny, to tell us a little bit about how you started out being so interested in physical fitness and sculpting your body and so on.
I've always been pretty active. I guess a lot of energy, bouncing off the walls growing up and wanting to get into things. So I've always needed to find a way of getting rid of the exercise or getting rid of the energy. And between dancing, I used to dance and professionally trained in ballet and salsa and jazz and hip hop, anything I can get my hands on, gymnastics, cheerleading. It just helped me. It helped calm me. And it wasn't until I started as a graduate, or actually as an undergrad at San Diego State University, that I noticed the relationship between me staying active and being healthy and making right choices and what I eat and what I don't drink and staying hydrated, that it really impacted my academic performance and my relationships with others. And continuing into graduate school, as a graduate student at San Diego State working on my master's, it was important for me to maintain a good sleep regimen and watching what I eat and staying active. And it made me happy because it helped me set goals for myself. It feels good when you finish a period or an interval at the gym. It's to go in to work out. But when you leave, you're proud of yourself because you've accomplished something that day. And as a graduate student at Louisiana Tech, I just kept it going. It keeps me happy.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
Sandra, can I kind of start off by asking you a question? And that is...
Knowing you, it'll be loaded, but go ahead.
Yes. I know that you know a lot about this, so I'm perfectly within my right. Kind of give us what you've learned, you know. I know you've only been doing this a year or two, and, what's the bottom line for you, or
I've only been doing it for a year or two. Are you trying to be funny?
Let's see. How long have you been doing this?
Oh gosh, what, 40 years?
40 years. So, I know that you're a big advocate. You're a big anti-sugar advocate. Tell us some of the general principles and that people should keep in mind for eating healthfully.
Well, I think the first step toward eating healthy is to just clean sugar out of your house. What happened to me when many years ago, 30 years ago, was that I was at a world-renowned endocrinologist for my children, and I decided to put myself in his care and ask him what he thought of my health. And he said, "Madam, your triglycerides are terrible." And I said, "What can I do?" And he said, "Don't eat sugar." So I went home, this is many, 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 as I said, 30 years ago or more, and started really researching sugar and realized that that's what causes you to have high triglycerides. And high triglycerides are just awful. I mean, they're blood fats, and they're the forerunner of heart attacks, high triglyceride levels. You should not ever have your triglyceride level get over 150. That's really the top number. What we found in our wellness program with working with corporation people who work in corporations and all is that they really don't know their numbers. They don't know what their LDLs are, their triglyceride level, their blood sugar. And once they know them and know that they're bad and not good for them, they get very invested in trying to get healthy. And the first thing we do is, get them off of sugar. If you will eat bread, you will not crave sugar. Thick, good, dense breads. And people try to substitute breads with fruit, and it just doesn't work. I mean, substitute sugar by using fruit, and it just doesn't work. It won't do the same thing.
You said something interesting earlier. You said that sugar is not a food, it's a chemical.
It is, that's right.
And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. They think of it, they throw it in the category of food. Yeah. And, just so long as you limit your calories, you're all right. And
sure.
It depends on what those calories are.
So when you're talking about food, you're talking about protein as a food?
Protein, carbohydrate, complex carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. You really don't want the simple carbohydrates. Sugar has to break down into sucrose and fructose. Fructose, it cannot be metabolized except by the liver. We can't use it for energy. It's stored in, it makes belly fat. If you see people with large bellies, it's from having too much sugar in their diet. The average person eats 135 pounds of sugar a day. If you lined up 135 one-pound bags.
No, 135 pounds a year.
A year. Did I say a day?
A day.
Oh.
I know you're excited.
I'll scare you to death.
I know.
Yeah, I'm not used to being, I guess, I wasn't thinking about that. I was moving on too also, and 60 pounds of added sugar. So we really are heavily consumed with eating sugar.
All right, so let me get this straight. The average American person eats 135 pounds of sugar per year.
That's correct. And I made that the lowest number I could. Some estimates will say 200 pounds for some people.
But then you went on and you made another statement. You said something about
60 pounds of added sugar.
What do you mean by that?
Well, processed food has sugar and fat added. And that's why it tastes so good. Food that you eat out, fast foods or processed foods, and they've had added sugars and added fats to make them taste better, so you want to eat more. And so that's added sugar.
My experience is pretty similar, a personal experience, actually.
Let me interrupt you. We have a caller, and we'll give our callers a priority over us. Is that all right with you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We have Morgan from New Orleans. Morgan, go right ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks so much. So I'm... I've been eating healthy for a few years. For many years. I'm from California. I was kind of raised on it. Haven't had soda in 5 years. Haven't eaten fast food regularly for at least 10 years. Pretty healthy, but I had a really rough childhood. I mean, like youth, basically, with drugs, alcohol, extreme sports. So I have a heart thing. I have regurgitation in my heart, and I get like an irregular heartbeat. Anyways, my question is, when I work out, I try to build muscle. I'm naturally thin, so I'm trying to bulk up. But every time I try to bulk up, I'm required to either eat more and work out harder. And those are the two things that lead to more irregular heartbeat for me. So I'm wondering if there's any suggestion there. When I'm eating a lot, I'll feel my heart is more prone to skipping beats or feeling bad. And same thing when I work out really hard. When I really start pushing it, I'll start to feel my heart do weird things, and then I have to pull back and say, oh, maybe it's not worth it. Any tips?
Sandra, do you want to speak to those issues?
Well, what does your physician say about your routine?
You know, it's been a couple of years since I went. I got the 24-hour Holter monitor, and that's when they told me I had the regurgitation. Just slight, not a big problem. They say they haven't said anything about working out or restricting that. As far as they know, I'm fine. I guess the only thing I've heard is pull back if you start feeling it or something.
Well, I would probably pull back if you start feeling, you know, different and having an irregular heartbeat. And I certainly would talk to a physician about those symptoms when you exercise and get a really good opinion on that and go with that opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, and earlier, Sandra, you were talking about that that certain types of exercise can actually add weight and may actually not be as good for maintaining a healthy kind of body weight.
Well, I do know that people who exercise strenuously have a very just it's almost impossible to get them to lose weight. I think maybe, and I could go into what I think is the reason, it may be that the body fights back and says, you're going to keep doing this to me, so I'm going to really prep up and not let you do this. But we in our experience, so what we do in our wellness program is get people to start walking. So, but that's people with a weight problem. If they want to lose, they need to walk. Once you get your weight to normal weight, then you can try exercise. Then you can move on into heavier exercise. But for this individual on the phone, I really think he needs to go over his symptoms with a doctor now.
Just get a good checkup.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Now, you're talking about exercise, Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy exercise. You're talking about starting out walking. And then you're talking about heavy exercise. What do you mean heavy exercise?
Well, go to a gym, work out lifting weights, the gym routine that they do, lunges, things that just anaerobic exercise. Okay. Anaerobic is where it's short distance, you know, the muscles are just moving in short distance. And we find that people who exercise with anaerobic exercise don't lose weight. But we find that people who walk, who are walkers, they do lose weight well. It enhances weight loss.
Now, Danita, you commented on that earlier, 5 minutes ago, before we started the program. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
I'm one of those people who bulk up if I work out. If I pick up the heavy weights, I'll bulk up and I'll add the pounds. So what I do to stay lean is a lot of Pilates. I'll run. I work my cardio. Yoga has been really helpful for my mind and for keeping me fit. So I have to just be mindful that anything too strenuous will put on the weight. Mm-hmm. And I want to stay lean and slender just to keep me active and keep me up with my dancing.
I do Pilates, and I think it's really good for core strength.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't tried to lose weight doing Pilates, but I would think it might be all right. I don't know, but we just find people who do a lot heavy anaerobic exercise just won't lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're essentially talking about lifting weights.
Yeah, and you know, I think people, you go to a gym and watch what they're doing. They're working it very hard. They're running very hard on a treadmill, maybe 4 miles an hour, lifting weights, doing lunges. What are some of the other things that they do at the gym?
The weight lifting is what I primarily see.
Mm-hmm.
Like bench presses and...
Free weights, anything with bar weights, just...
quadriceps and hamstrings, you know, those machines that exercise those parts, and mm-hmm. biceps, triceps. Yeah.
Anything with weights. I stay away from anything with weights.
Mm-hmm. You don't exercise on any kind of machines?
Unless it's the treadmill, no. Occasionally I'll do something small. I'll have a lightweight, like 15 pounds, and I'll do longer reps, but that's just because I want to maintain my strength. I don't want to increase it, but I generally stay away from anything over 30, 35 pounds.
So, Sandra, talk a little bit about, say, somebody is wanting to lose some weight, and they want to do it with diet, and they want to do it, not diet, but eating healthfully, I guess, and then they want to do it with exercise.
Well, don't eat sugar. And I think the Surgeon General, I think the American Heart Association now recommends 6 teaspoons a day for a woman, 9 teaspoons a day for a man. How that translates is 4 grams of sugar equals 1 teaspoon. So cut sugar out, eat good breads, chew very slowly, slow down your eating. I've seen people wolf down their food in 5 minutes, and 10 minutes is long for them. So learn to chew slowly, eat only when you're hungry, start walking, drink water, keep mm-hmm. hydrated, and don't, you know, eat things you really like, and don't go on a diet. Just eat what you like, get sugar. Once you get sugar out of your life, the rest just kind of becomes so much easier. Mm. Keep hydrated.
And drink lots of water.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely helps with appetite suppression.
Now, you were asking...
Well, it helps with appetite because dehydration makes you think you're thirsty. You know, when you get thirsty, you can think you're hungry.
Yeah.
I said it makes you think you're thirsty.
Right. So when we're really dehydrated, it feels like we're hungry.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Kind of nature's way of taking care of us. We can get water out of food.
Now, comment for just a quick minute about this issue of hidden sugar. Where are
I just finished reading a big, huge volume on it. It's in everything. It's in every processed food that you eat, frozen foods that you buy, food you eat in restaurants, fast food. You know, a lot of these restaurants that are chains, their food is shipped in. They just warm it. And that food has been enhanced, they call it. And that's enhanced with sugar and fat, added sugar and fat. And like they may get in fried potatoes that have been fried, and then they refry them. So you're getting a double dose of fats and they add sugar for taste. So a lot of the foods that we get in these chain restaurants are enhanced foods. And you just have to be aware of that. I'm not going to tell people not to go to them, but just be aware of that. And so any added sugar that you'd eat, such as ordering a dessert, I'll see people order big, huge, fancy desserts. And then it's like, I'll go on my diet on Monday. Mm-hmm. It's a weekend, so I'm going to really eat it up. You're laughing, but isn't it true?
It is very true. Or they're not aware of the serving size when they receive a big dessert.
That's true, you know. And so they get a huge, big platter of food that used to be for a family of four. And they just eat half of it and think they've done okay, you know. And we all get to see that way. I can almost get tricked myself.
Mm-hmm. And Danita, you became very aware of just how much sugar is in food relatively recently.
Yeah, over the summer last year, I got really, really ill, and I was instructed by my physician to cut out all sugar from my diet. And that's when I became really aware of how much sugar was just packed in everything that we eat. Breads and milks and juices. Juices are really high.
Well, juices are pure sugar.
Yeah. I've stopped drinking juices altogether. Mm-hmm. Even having a glass of wine is just, there's so much sugar.
Wine drinkers can't lose weight. I'm on the weight loss side of the life.
But it really made me aware because my health was on the line. I mm-hmm. had to really be mindful of what I was eating, and I had to research things, and even fruit. I had to cut fruit out my diet mm-hmm. altogether because there's so much natural sugars in fruit, and those are things that we just have to be aware of. But we're not, unless you were raised to be mindful of what you put mm-hmm. in your system, or unless you're forced to look at what we eat. You're just not aware of how much sugar is consumed.
I try to tell people fruit is nature's candy.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You need it, you know, be very careful because it's half sucrose and half fructose. And the fructose our body just doesn't need.
Mm. Now, you also a lot of times comment about milk and milk products. Do you want to say anything about that?
People just don't need to be drinking it. And they think if they drink a 0.5% that they're all right, or 1% milk. Milk's really, full milk is 4%. So if you drink 2%, I mean, you're just cutting 2% of fat. It's the lactose, the milk sugar.
Lactose is sugar.
Yeah, your body just doesn't need that milk sugar.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
Sandra and Danita are saying some sort of radical things here that go against go against what we normally do in society. So if you mm-hmm. want to add a comment, a question, or a criticism, we're open to any of that, or any ideas that have really worked for you maintaining a good balance between your eating habits and your exercise program. Now, Shelley, you're always thin, and how do you do it?
I don't put much effort into it, honestly.
she's one of those people we call true thins.
I know it.
Yes.
Lucky.
There are people in our office that hate her because she does eat anything and everything and stays slim. I don't know. I'm very envious. Anything else you want to add? You were talking about water. You were talking about sugar. You were talking about eating slowly.
Mm-hmm. Chew slow. Eat very slowly. Eat only when you're hungry. We do a lot of just snacking because we're bored. But really, I find that if people will eat really what they want to eat, they're willing to wait until they're hungry to eat. If you're just going to eat diet food, then it's like, oh, what the heck. You know, I might as well go ahead and just snack because I'm not looking forward to what I'm going to have for my meal. But mm-hmm. if you're going to have something really good, then you don't mind waiting until you're hungry. It's not, you know, man is the only animal that really eats when we're not hungry. And you can't really, you know, dogs and cats don't. So I don't know why we insist that humans do it.
I know when I found out, when I did the switch from taking out all the sugar in my system, it was a horrible, horrible existence. I went through withdrawals. I had headaches. I didn't feel good. I felt groggy. It was a real pain in my backside. But then I had to learn to enjoy the healthier foods. And in response to that, my body physically responded better. I felt more alert. I was able to concentrate. I was in a better mood. I felt happy mm-hmm. with myself because I made better decisions for myself. It was just a horrible transition going from my day-to-day. And before, I lived with the mantra of everything in moderation. So I can have some chips here, and I can have a glass of wine there, and I can have some white bread here, you know, as long as it was in moderation. But when all that was stripped, I had to learn to really enjoy the healthier foods, and my body responded in a really positive way.
Shelley, we have a caller?
Yes, we do. We have Lawrence from Lufkin. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Good evening, and thank you for taking my phone call. I wanted to touch base with you. I'm 62 years old, but for my entire life, for my adult life, I was an athlete when I was younger. Built more for strength and speed, and that's what I did. And I've continued to do that throughout my adult life. My job requires some lifting, and then I lift weights at the gym sometimes. And it always raises my weight, which is not what I'm interested in. So I backed off of that because I kind of feel flabby when I don't do it.
You feel what when you don't do it?
A little bit flabby when I quit lifting weights, and I don't like that feeling. I have restricted my intake of beverages and other things. I'm conscious of the things that are bad for you. And I drink water and coffee, but no soft drinks and no beer. But I do have a weakness for wine, and I enjoy a glass of wine almost every evening. And just listening here the last few minutes, I said, well, maybe I need to cut that out too and start walking and stay away from the gym.
you're just a man from my heart, I tell you. Yeah, get that wine, will put it on you, and it'll pack it on your belly, and that may be where your flab is. And walk, you know, just do plain old walking. Man was built to walk, you know. There weren't any gyms in caveman time. They walked. And so man was made to do a lot of walking. And if you do that and get rid of the wine, if you want something to drink, drink beer. We find that beer, you know, if you drink beer, people can still lose. But
wow, that kind of surprises me, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. It did me also.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, you would hear the story, the beer belly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no, people can drink beer and still lose.
Huh. Well, Sandra, is it wine has a high concentration of sugar?
You know, you're just asking a question that nobody can answer. But we've got the hard evidence. They drink wine and they cannot lose. And I spent about 8 hours last week working to study, look up research all I could on wine, and one little phrase caught my attention, and that was that in the final making process of wine, they put fructose in to make it do or whatever it was that it wrote. But I thought it may be that fructose at the very end. It's a fructose the body can't take. Mm-hmm.
I kind of agree with Lawrence in the sense that I like to do some weights because I feel stronger when I do the weights, but you've always cautioned me about that and so on.
Well, I think in our society it's either all or nothing. I think either we're not doing anything or we're just doing too much. So if you can just maybe do them once a week or lift a few or whatever. Main thing, get the weight off and then do them.
Yeah, lose the weight first and then...
Right, and then you can, if you start gaining, back off.
Now, a lot of people, you say, go out and start walking. How do you recommend, because I was interested in the 4 mile an hour on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And, you were speaking about that earlier, but what's your recommendation to our listeners regarding just walking?
What we ask people to do is to just walk to the corner, and then in order to get home, you have to walk back. And just start out slowly, because people go to gyms and they put them on treadmills, and it took me a year to learn to be comfortable walking on a treadmill. And so we just have people walk outside. It's very hot now, but if you have a large home, flat, all on one floor, you can just kind of walk the house. A lot of times I'll just walk my house. But start off slowly and buy a pedometer. You can get them at any drugstore and put it on. It gets to be such a game. It's like, oh my goodness, I don't have 3,000 steps today. I'm going to get this thing together and I'm going to get up and try to get to 5. Or, you just have fun learning to see it. And it's kind of very challenging, but they're fun. I've never felt bad because of my treadmill. My pedometer. It's never made me feel bad.
So use a pedometer to get some feedback, some sort of biofeedback, would you say?
Yeah.
How much are you walking? And can you talk about number of steps? And
well, they say 10,000 steps a day keeps the doctor away. And I think that's, not a good idea to put in people's heads, because when I get 10,000 steps, I'm a small person. And when I get 10,000 steps, I just go, whew. So work toward 5,000 or 2,000. If you can't walk but 500 now, work toward 1,000. Once you can walk 1,000, walk 2,000 or 1,500. Just build. Train, don't strain. Just keep walking. We had a man who had bad rheumatoid arthritis, and we wanted him to start walking. And so finally, we got him to walk to his mailbox and back. Now he's walking 2 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to invite everybody to please call in with a question or just join the conversation at 1-800-552-8502.
Okay. Do either of you have a direction you want to go next in terms of topics, either in the exercise area or in the eating area? Maintaining weight, exercise and sleep hygiene is a good topic. Do you want to talk a little bit about sleep hygiene?
Yeah, I could talk about sleep hygiene. So generally when I think about sleep hygiene, it's what are all the things that build up to me maintaining a good pattern of sleep or a good routine to help me get a good night's sleep. So the things that I avoid are eating too early or too late, actually too close to bedtime, drinking anything caffeinated. I'm caffeine sensitive, so I don't want to stay up all night. That includes alcohol. I can't have my glass of wine too... I am a wine drinker, unfortunately, I have to admit that. So I can't have my wine too close to bedtime because that'll just upset my stomach, and I know that the sugar that'll just sit in my system will keep me hyperactive. Try not to watch TV because the flashing lights will keep me up, or it'll activate my neurons, have my brain thinking. Try not to read in bed. If I can't fall asleep within 15 minutes, I'll get up and do a little lap in the living room because I don't want to train my body to stay awake in bed. I want to go to sleep when I hit my bedroom and crawl into my bed. What I've noticed is by maintaining a good sleeping routine and making sure that I prep myself before going to bed is that I feel better. As a student, I need to make sure that I'm aware. I'm also a counselor, so that I have to make sure that I'm there for my clients when I'm in the room. I don't want to nod off, and I don't want to lose my focus while I'm with them. Plus, I preach the importance of sleep hygiene to my clients, so I want to actually do it and not to say it. It helps with your moods, the way that you interact with other people. We all know what it's like when we're crabby the next day because we didn't get any sleep and our eyes are grainy and we can't think and it's hard to function. It's just not a good thing. So sleep is important, and the whole realm of of being fit, mind and body.
What about food and sleeping? Are any of these, are you know, we know that sugar, for example, is contraindicated with kids and adults who have attention deficit disorder. Would you agree?
I would, you know, I agree about anything about sugar.
Okay.
I think I've already proven that.
Yeah.
I've said enough about that.
What about foods? Are certain types of foods related to quality sleep, or do you know anything in that area?
I really don't know. I really couldn't speak to that. I think that the behaviors that you do, what you were just talking about, the behaviors that you do before you go to bed, so many people stay in bed when they can't sleep, and I like the idea of what you said of getting up and getting out of the bed and train your brain that the bed is for sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reset, start all over again.
Mm-hmm. Get up and do something for 15 minutes or walk around your house two or three times and then get back in the bed. And then just keep doing it. But I really like the behaviors that you have before you go to sleep. That'll help good sleep.
Do you have any routine? I mean, what's your sleep hygiene, Beth?
I just don't watch TV or read in bed. Mm-hmm. And that helps me know that the bed is for sleep. And I had never really put it in that way to myself until you just said it. And I like what you said, because I read somewhere else and I watch TV somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tell my patients that the bedroom is for rest and intimacy. Mm-hmm. Just those two activities. And I try to have my patients keep the world out of the bedroom, mm-hmm. you know, with electronic devices and TVs and reading and so on, that you want to go in there and have a place of solitude and peace and relaxation. And it's a place for intimacy. It's not a place for paying bills or mm-hmm. discussing financial problems before going to sleep, that kind of thing.
I think reading before you go to sleep can be helpful if it's a novel or something that just kind of winds the brain down mm-hmm.
So you do some reading then?
I read before I go to bed.
Okay. So that's interesting too.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
We're at Red River Radio, and we're having a discussion about food and eating and healthy eating, losing weight, maintaining weight, and exercise, and so on. Dunning, when you're doing your exercise, do you exercise how much time is there between your exercise in the evening and going to sleep? How much time do you not exercise?
I'm one of those rare individuals who, when I work out, the moment I finish, I don't experience what some people call a runner's high. I just hit a wall and I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. So I prefer to work out in the afternoon because I'm just completely wasted after I'm done. I can't think, I can't function very well. So I enjoy getting a good hour's workout in and then going to sleep as soon as possible.
Okay. We have a caller?
Yes, we do. We have Janet from Gilmer. Go ahead, Janet.
Hi. I hated to call because I didn't want to miss any part of the show. So, anyway, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the bread.
Yeah.
I mean, all the bread that I see, and it's so very hard to find bread that doesn't have high fructose corn syrup in it. And I know that the body doesn't recognize that as a food, and it doesn't know what to do with it, so it stores it as fat, doesn't it?
Well, the bread, the sugar, is going to be half fructose and half sucrose. You know, try to go to, I think we've got I think we have places in town that don't use it, and you can buy really good, dense bread if you'll look in other areas rather than just the bread section. I try to get good, dense breads.
Now, she lives in Gilmer, mm-hmm. which is
really fortunate because she can finally probably find people there who bake.
I was just going to say, I learned to make my own bread mm-hmm. because I enjoy the breads, but I couldn't mm-hmm. have the sugar, and I didn't know what was added to it. So I've had a lot of fun just learning what kind of nuts and grains I can add mm-hmm. to make the hearty, dense bread myself, mm-hmm. and I know exactly what's going in it.
Mm-hmm. Eat just good, hearty, dense breads.
Hearty and dense. What about white versus...
Well,
whole wheat, or
they're just not as satisfying to the body because it's a complex carbohydrate bread is, and you want it to break down slowly. So you want the denser it is, and the more time it's going to stay in your digestive tract, and the more satisfied you'll be. I'm really for bread. I'm just for good dense, good breads.
Good breads that are dense. They mm-hmm. metabolize more slowly, mm-hmm. and complex carbohydrates put less sugar into the mm-hmm. system. And so, okay.
The complex carbohydrates are all glucose. Mm-hmm. And I was just doing this presentation the other day, and I was telling people, I said, you know, people don't know the difference between a simple and a complex. Mm-hmm. Everything is complex, celery, parsley, bread, rice, and the simple is sugar and fruit. So everything else is complex. So you want to really focus on, you know, there's nothing wrong with eating complex. It breaks down into glucose. Your brain uses glucose and every cell in your body uses glucose. Mm-hmm. But fructose can't be utilized for fuel.
Okay. We have a caller?
Yes, we do. We have Emma from Nacogdoches. Go ahead with your question, Emma.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I guess I kind of have insomnia. I'm not sure. I can only get about 3 to 5 hours of sleep a night. And I've been trying everything from exercising at night to whatever, and still no luck. I was wondering if there's anything else I can do maybe to make up for any health issues that I'm getting from this.
Are you taking naps during the day? Any naps? Do you nap?
I don't. I'm quite busy with work and school.
I'm just curious. I've had people who said they napped and couldn't sleep at night, you know. Mm-hmm. But y'all take the sleep questions.
I guess the first thing I would ask is for you to monitor what you're doing before you go to bed. Kind of like I mentioned, what my routine tends to be are the things that I stay away from. I had to first acknowledge what my behaviors were before bed. You know, I tended to sit, I had a TV in my room. I don't have a TV in my room anymore because I learned that wasn't helpful. But make a checklist and kind of monitor what you're doing before bed. How long have you been experiencing the insomnia?
I am in my third year of college, and it's been since about fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. Emma, did you also said that you exercise before going to sleep. Did I understand you correctly?
Yes, I've tried it as a strategy. I've had some friends say that they are just so done with everything after they work out, and that helps them get tired for bed. Mm-hmm. That's one of the strategies that I've used, yeah.
Yeah, that works for me, but that doesn't work for everybody. It's good that you're exploring different opportunities or different options. What I would recommend is if you have a chance to Google sleep hygiene checklist and to go off the checklist to see if there are any routines that you can integrate into what you're doing now, such as making sure you don't drink any caffeine right before bed or at least an hour before bed. Try not to drink any caffeine like midday if you don't have to. You might be caffeine sensitive if you are a caffeine consumer, and that would keep you up for a while. Look at some of the things that you're eating. You know, sugar, I know that's been a hot topic on today's conversation, but sugar will, you know, kind of hype you up. If you're eating anything too sweet after dinner, that'll cause, you know, like a sugar rush, and that'll keep you up. You're in college, and I know what college is like. It's pretty stressful. So if anxiety or stress is something that may be keeping you up, finding a way to diffuse that some, whether it's journaling or maybe talking to someone, maybe
some
hanging out.
Meditation, maybe? Something
yes.
That
yoga. I'm a huge yoga fan now. For the past 6 months, it's helped me tremendously stay in shape as well as keep me a little bit calm. My brain is usually all over the place in graduate school, but yoga's been very helpful. So maybe Googling the checklist could be something that you can look into to see if there are things that you are doing that you shouldn't do or things that you can add that might be helpful.
Shelley, we have another caller. Thank you,
yes.
Emma.
Yes, we do. We have Leon from Bossier. Go right ahead with your question, Leon.
I was curious about the comments about milk a few minutes ago, and I think that I might have misunderstood about milk being a no-no because of its sugar content. Would you repeat that, please?
Well, it's, you know, it's lactose, and so you're getting that lot, you know, you're getting that sugar, and there's other better sources of protein than milk, and we just don't need milk any longer in our diet. It's not necessary, and so I think it's better if we don't drink it.
Well, there was a time in our lives when we did need milk.
Milk is for calves. But since we don't breastfeed children usually anymore, then we give the baby, you know, cow's milk. But I don't see, and the people that I work with and work for us don't see that it's necessary in a person's diet.
Okay.
More unnecessary than
Okay. Yes. Well, that's interesting. Well, I think you clarified it for him. I hope Leon, that helps. You have another caller?
Yes, we do. We have Drew, also from Bossier. Go right ahead with your question, Drew.
Hi, how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well.
My question is, I've struggled with being overweight for most of my, since I was a teenager. And I've tried everything from dieting to exercise and to an extreme diet where I eat only quite literally once a day, which I know is really bad. And I'm currently, at the moment, I'm working two jobs. And I was wanting to know if you had any suggestions as to how I could fit in an exercise regime in with that, or what should I do to help it encourage weight loss.
Danita, I know that you are very busy. How do you find time?
I have to make time, but something that that just hit me is you're working two jobs, which seems to be pretty, it would be pretty stressful for me. And stress is a known contributor to weight gain and weight maintenance. You know, you get your cortisol going, and then if you don't have time, you're picking the fast foods up so that you can just consume something and have something in your belly so you can keep pushing forward. How are you doing with your stress levels and managing everything that you've got going on?
Well, right now, I actually just started the whole ordeal. And so far, it seems to be doing all right. But, there's, you know, of course, there's other circumstances with everything that does have me a bit stressed. My weight hasn't I haven't gained any weight here for a little bit. Shockingly, it's as stressed out as I've been. But I can't seem to get it to go down.
What I've done and what I find helpful is just reducing my diets to more of a kind of a raw basis, going to fresh fruits and vegetables, more vegetables and fruits, going for a lot of color on my plate, sticking to proteins, less red meat. That's helped me by simplifying my diet. That's helped me stay healthy. And then I've had to just force an exercise routine into my schedule because it's just difficult. Life gets busy. But we have to take care of ourselves physically as well as mentally and still pay the bills. So it's kind of a balancing act for me.
We have another caller?
Yes, we do. We have Polly. Go right ahead with your question, Polly.
Okay. My question is about milk as well, but not animal milk. I'm a vegetarian, and I have for a long time enjoyed soy milk. And my sister had breast cancer in the last little while, and she said that soy milk was full of hormones and that I should drink coconut milk. So I'm very confused, and I wondered if you could, you know, enlighten me somewhat.
There's a lot of controversy about soy milk. I personally am not for it.
I just wanted you to speak more clearly into the microphone.
I said I'm not a fan of soy milk. There's so much controversy about it, and so I wouldn't drink it for myself. And I don't know that much about coconut milk. Why are you drinking it? What?
Just to put on cereal. I mean, that's really all.
Well, what cereal are you eating?
Bran cereal. I mean, I can eat it without dry even, but I, you know, from childhood, you sort of like milk on cereal.
Well, you know, I'm not a big cereal fan. We really don't like people eating cereal in the program. But be careful of the cereal that you're eating. Make sure that it's not doesn't have a lot of sugar in it. And you may want to consider eating something else beside the cereal, and then you won't have to use the coconut milk.
What would you suggest that someone, because we're so used to, you know, having a bowl of cereal in the morning, what else would you suggest as a good breakfast?
Well, you know, I suggest you wait until you're hungry to eat. So whenever that is, then you'd find the food that would be fitting for that time of day.
Okay.
Sandra, why are you so against cereal? Say a little bit more about that.
Well, cereal is so refined. Cereal eaters don't lose weight.
Cereal eaters, weight lifters, wine drinkers, and overeaters.
And sugar.
And psychologists. Well, sorry, Donnie.
Listen, that leaves a lot of good things in the world you can eat. You know, you might want to eat, you know, there's just so many other things that you can eat. You can eat a peanut butter sandwich on good dense bread.
Yeah, I know you do recommend peanut butter.
That'd be very filling, Carrie. You know, carry you a long time. Peanut butter, good.
those of you who are listeners just have no idea what it's like to be sitting between or sitting in a room here with three slender women. But on the other hand, this is a good opportunity and to be with three slender women. But being my size and living with working with three slender women, it's kind of...
Dr. Vegan's very handsome, so we're with a very handsome man.
It's kind of intimidating. I wanted to ask you a quick question about brain foods. People are talking about brain foods all the time. What are there foods that you know of that help the brain? I know exercise helps the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Omegas are really good. Fish. Mm-hmm. Fish is supposed to be really good. I'm allergic to fish, so I have to find substitutes.
So what do you... what you're doing then. What are you substituting for fish?
Chia seeds. I drink chia seeds. I put on my oatmeal, whole grain oatmeal. I also consume... I can't think of the name of it, but it's pretty gelatinous in consistency. It's dry, and it could be it's meal, and it's a seed. Mm-hmm. I had to Google ways that I could substitute the omegas that I'm missing out because I can't eat fish.
Now, Sandra, you and I have ordered some, that cold water salmon that we...
We did. We got it from Seattle.
Seattle, that's right.
I think people need to be aware that the fish that we get in our area doesn't, you can't depend on it for your omega-3s because it's pond-raised, it's grain-fed, and it has to be cold-water fish. And of course, we don't have any cold water here that we can catch fish and eat them. So people have to take omega-3s from a health food store or eat canned salmon and sardines. When I was a child, I would see a lot of the people eating sardines on crackers. They were getting the omega-3s. You could get omega-3s in your beef before 1952. After 1952, we started grain feeding beef and before we sent it to be butchered. And so our beef doesn't have omega-3 in it any longer. But eat canned salmon, sardines, and that's a wonderful source of omega-3s.
Mm-hmm. Flaxseed, that's what I was thinking. Flaxseed, spinach, soybeans, those are also really good sources of omegas replacements.
And Danita, you said you drink your chia seeds.
Yes.
Could you explain that process?
So the chia seeds, if you Google them, they're a really ancient grain, and I think they're fantastic. They come in the dry form, and you can put them in water. So I'll put maybe a teaspoon or two and a full bottle of water, a 16-ounce bottle of water, and then I'll let them soak up as much water as they can, let them sit in there for about 5 minutes. And it is a bit of a surprise when you drink it for the first time because they do, they're a little gelatinous. It's almost like melted jello if you don't have enough water, but you drink it and it's really healthy for you. It helps regulate your digestive system and you get great minerals or vitamins from it. And it makes me feel good.
So in terms of brain food, mainly, I guess your answer is fish, cold water fish.
Sardines, salmon.
Sardines.
Canned salmon.
Canned salmon,
mm-hmm.
Sardines.
Mm-hmm.
And what about tuna, canned tuna?
Yes, but there's so much about tuna that is negative that I like to go toward canned salmon more.
That's the one thing that I can eat is tuna. My allergist said that canned tuna is not real fish. About time it's done being processed and put into a can. So whatever the protein is that I'm allergic to, I'm not affected by it from canned tuna. So it's kind of iffy.
So the tuna is so processed that any of the benefits that we would get from it in its more natural form are gone?
It's gone, okay. Yeah. That's the only fish that I can consume because it's no longer...
Really?
It's no longer fish.
Okay. I wanted to ask a quick question about is there, changes in diet and changes in exercise... What influence does that have on the mentation process in terms of, people developing Alzheimer's disease or any other kind of degenerative brain disease? Do you have any thoughts on that issue?
Brain disease, I don't know. The thing that they're I tell you, there's so much new research coming out. And here again, it's all around sugar because fructose, they're realizing, is so hard on the body. And that's true of fruits also. And there's just, it affects memory, fructose does. And there's just, so I think if you don't eat sugar and walk and drink and keep your body hydrated, and you have started on a really good path to health.
Mm-hmm. With my patients who have anxiety disorders and panic, mm-hmm. I often ask them about how much soda they drink. Mm-hmm. How much caffeine are they using?
Mm-hmm.
Do you do the same with your clients?
I do ask them about what they're consuming and what their behaviors are, and I like to talk them through, have them explain to me the symptoms that they're experiencing, mm-hmm. increased heart rate and sweaty hands and feeling foggy-minded or racing thoughts, because then we can compare how they feel when they consume caffeine. You might get a heart flutter, or you'll start to feel like your brain is a little fuzzy. You've got a lot of energy, but you don't really know what to do with it. I'll compare their symptoms with a panic attack or when they're feeling a spike in their anxiety to how they feel when they consume caffeine. I focus on caffeine because I'm caffeine sensitive, so I know that when I drink too much caffeine, it's downhill from that point.
Hmm. I gave up. Shelley, you too. You and I both have given up sodas, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not completely off of them, but I'm pretty much off of sodas, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're talking about sugared sodas or diet sodas?
Diet sodas.
Diet sodas,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm down to one a day, and it's only at lunch.
Which one is that?
I drink a Coke Zero, one of them at lunch only, where I used to drink six or eight a day. But, you know, I haven't noticed. I didn't have any withdrawal.
Well, as long as you have one, you won't.
Well, I didn't, you know, it went from eight or whatever, eight a day mm-hmm. to one. I had no withdrawal. And then I was completely off of them for about 4 months, and I had no withdrawal.
And then really? I made you relapse.
Yes, Shelley contributed. We went to lunch somewhere, and she bought me a Diet Coke.
Yes,
and,
I did.
Yeah, that was bad of you.
I know.
Okay. Anyway, but I haven't noticed any tremendous difference.
That's
being
good to know. People need to know that. I'm glad you brought that up. That's really good that people can hear you say that.
That I was able to withdraw from them.
Yeah, and not have any symptoms.
Had no symptoms.
And I was shocked because when I drank a lot of sodas, I mean, I drank a whole lot of sodas, and I really didn't have a problem. And that's why I'd avoided it for years, because I just knew I was going to feel terrible.
Are you comfortable telling our readers why you decided not to?
Yeah, I mean, I had kidney stones, okay. And I didn't want to go through that again. So that's why I stopped finally. Although for years I knew I needed to, I didn't because I was so afraid of mm-hmm. going through the withdrawals.
Are you drinking one a day?
I drink about one a day, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Sandra, I know you drink a diet soda every now and then.
Mm-hmm, I drink Diet Right because I like the sweetener that they use, but I don't have them all the time. I have a cup of coffee in the morning. That's usually about all I have every day. Mm-hmm. Of caffeine.
Do you have opinions about diet sodas and mood and changes in mood? Or?
I really don't have an opinion about that.
Donita, do you?
No, I generally stay away from sodas myself, but I just throw that in the category of just junk food. Too much mm-hmm. junk, anything is going to have some kind of negative impact on your mood and your personality, the way you behave, the way you feel. You know, you start to get sluggish after eating too much junky stuff.
That's true.
So I just throw that all in the same category. I don't drink any sodas, but I also have a bad reaction. I'll break out, and it's just not a good feeling.
Let me ask you one other quick question. We're kind of running out of time. What do you think about Sandra's salads?
Well, lettuce is the lowest form of fiber, so a lot of times people feel like they're not going to get their fiber unless they eat lettuce. And so I'm not, you know, I think it can be overeating unless it's something you really want.
Okay.
And you have to watch out for the salad dressing because it's got a lot of carbs.
We have
sugar
Sherry from Huntington. Do you have a quick question, Sherry?
Yeah, I have one comment and one question. First of all, some time back I had to go and eat on a diet very clean. I won't describe all the circumstances, but sugar was one of the first things to go, and I was able to get off my antidepressants. And slowly but surely, I actually started eating sugar again sometime later, and now I'm back on, you know, antidepressants. So I think there's a definite correlation. But also, I was going to ask, the dense bread, are you talking about something like Ezekiel bread?
Like what?
Ezekiel bread. Yeah.
Yes, that's a good bread.
It's a very good bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Ezekiel's very good.
And you won't crave sugar if you eat enough bread.
I really like your question about the sugar and the antidepressants, Sherry. Thank you for saying that. I need to wrap up with the two of you, and I thank both of you for being here. Sandra Brightup, Donita Wines, thank you very much for being our guest. And I thank our eight callers for calling in and participating with us. You've really enriched this program. Thank you very much.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, you should consult a mental health professional or a physician. This show is available for download, or you may listen to a podcast of this program on our website, redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Henry Edwards, Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Al Villarreal. Production of Mental Health Matters is made possible in part by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and also by the Gambles at Spring Lake. Gamble Guest Care's assisted living community, located behind Spring Lake Guest Care Center on Line Avenue in Shreveport. Learn more about Gamble Guest Care at gambleguestcare.com. I'm Shelley Visconti, along with Dr. Mark Vegan. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.